Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Rihanna Hidalgo, law student here on behalf of Petitioner Elmer Giovanni Roja Lopez. I will address the Convention Against Torture claim for 5 minutes, and my colleague, Ms. Miller, will address the asylum claim for 7, and we'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Roja Lopez is only alive today because through luck, he escaped a kidnapping that was meant to end in his death. This was only after Mr. Roja Lopez was specifically targeted by gang members in El Salvador, tracked across several locations as he tried to flee, and then ultimately kidnapped by corrupt police officers who hand-delivered him to gang members to be killed. So that credible threat of death is at the core of his CAT claim, and it shows that he is more likely than not to suffer future torture. The agency's denial of relief was wrong for 3 key reasons. First, its relocation finding was not supported by substantial evidence. Second, the agency misconstrued the state action requirement. And finally, the agency failed to understand that because these actors intend to kill Mr. Roja Lopez, there's no question as to whether the future harm would rise to the level of torture. And in analyzing past torture, it also did not consider the imminent threat of death. Turning to relocation, the agency failed to engage with the most relevant evidence in the record on this point, which is that Mr. Roja Lopez himself has already tried to relocate 3 separate times, and each time the gang was easily able to find him. One of those relocations was 2 to 3 hours away, and as Mr. Roja Lopez testified, the problem is the country is very small, gangs are everywhere, and they communicate between the neighborhoods, and that statement is also supported by the country conditions evidence. The agency instead relied solely on inferences about Mr. Roja Lopez's family members, but those family members' circumstances would only be relevant if they were similarly situated to him, and they are not. They don't share the characteristics that placed his life in danger, and that they did not witness a gang murder, and they were not believed to have reported it, and those family members never became gang targets. There's no indication that the gang ever intended to track or follow or pursue these family members if they were to move, only that gang members continued to return to essentially Mr. Roja Lopez's last known location. The pattern is where Mr. Roja Lopez goes, the gang follows. So taking a step back to...
So counsel, let me ask you about that. And I hear your point about the fact that the gang doesn't seem to be after the family members. They're after Mr. Roja Lopez. But the reason that the gang was looking for the family members was to find Roja Lopez. So when the family members moved, if there's not evidence that the gang continued to follow him, how is that not support the agency's conclusion that, you know, since they're looking for Roja Lopez and the way they were able to find him most of the times was through his family members, if they aren't continuing to pursue his family members in order to find them, then it would seem like that's some evidence that they are not, that they, if they can't find the family members when they move, they wouldn't be able to find him when they move. Precisely because the reason that they're looking for the family members is because they're looking for Roja Lopez.
Sure, Your Honor. So to clarify, I think what's really important in the facts here is that family members never received contact from gang members until Mr. Roja Lopez moved in with them. So the evidence is that the gang members were on the lookout for Mr. Roja Lopez. So there's every reason to believe if Mr. Roja Lopez were to go move back in with these family members or show his face in these towns, that gangs would start knocking on their doors again.
Is it their testimony in the record that they continued to, you know, when he left, the family member, didn't the family members testify that the gangs were still coming around looking for him at their houses or at their locations? And so, but then what the agency said was, yeah, but then when the family members moved, there's no evidence that they continued to be contacted. So I understand that they're going after the family members because they're hoping the family members will lead them to Roja Lopez. But if the family members move and they don't go after the family members anymore, then that would seem to be some support for the agency's conclusion, precisely because they're going after the family members because of Roja Lopez.
Your Honor, the difference there is that the family members received contact from gangs when they remained in Mr. Rogel Lopez's last known location. But continuing to return to those homes to contact the family members is far different than an intent to track or follow those family members. So again, it's not that the gang has more than established its ability to find Mr. Rogel Lopez. It found him three separate times. So if the family members don't hear from gangs after moving, it's because the gang members aren't tracking them.
Well, that's how they found him in the first place, right? He was, I mean, other than the time that he got stopped by the brother of the gang member who's a police officer, the other times they found him by finding him through his family members. That's where they were going to find him. So if I try to pretend like I'm a gang for a second, if I was trying to find him, I would keep on trying to find him at family members' houses. So that would mean I was still searching for the family members.
So I think the key difference to address your question is that, for example, Mr. Rogel Lopez has other family members in El Salvador. Those family members never received contact from gangs. It's not as if this gang was going around looking for his brothers or sisters or cousins to find out where he was. It was when he showed his face in these areas that gang members got wind he was there and then went to the home where they found out he was staying to contact them. So there's an important difference in how the gang was looking at the uncle and the sister and Mr. Rogel Lopez himself.
So you're saying that you don't think the record reflects that they found him through his family members. You think they found him and then sort of tracked him down. And then it just so happened that, you know, instead of staying at a Motel 6, he was staying at a family member's house. That's your view of the evidence?
Well, I can only speculate as to how they determined where his home was, but I think the evidence is very clear that the gang's able to find Mr. Rogel Lopez and that the gang follows where Mr. Rogel Lopez goes. Again, it would be a different story if other family members in El Salvador with whom he didn't stay received contact. So the intent, this campaign of following and tracking Mr. Rogel Lopez, again, is far different than simply returning to these homes. And the sister's testimony is that they continue to return to the home to look for Mr. Rogel Lopez. So they showed an interest in him after he left. And given that they found him three separate times and then the family members moved, if we assume that they didn't hear from him, it's because they're different. The gang is not treating them the same way as Mr. Rogel Lopez. And if I may, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal if there are no further questions on CAT.
Sure. That's fine.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Kelsey Miller, and may it please the court. Mr. Rogel Lopez is also eligible for asylum protection here because he fears persecution on account of his membership in a particular social group. That particular social group is men in El Salvador who are not gang members, but who are persecuted on the belief that they reported gang crime. At a minimum, legal errors require a remand here. The issue of social distinction is reviewed de novo.
I'm a little confused by Judge Corman, did you have a question?
I did, but you have seen
your... You go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, what was the motivation? It seems to me they were motivated not because of his membership in a particular group, but they were motivated by the fact that he had betrayed one of their members. If he had betrayed a member of some other gang, they couldn't have cared less. So I'm just trying to understand what was the motivation. Is it his membership, unless you consider this gang a group? It just seems to me that what I'm troubled by is that they were simply motivated by revenge, and they weren't going after everybody whoever betrayed a member of any group.
Your Honor, Mr. Rogel Lopez was persecuted because he's believed to have reported the gang crime, which poses a direct threat.
Of this gang.
Sorry?
Of this gang.
Yes, of this gang.
but they're not in the business. This gang is not out to vindicate all, you know, go after everybody who ever testifies or is believed to have testified or provided evidence against members of other gangs. It's just this group of people who've committed crimes. They think he snitched on them, and they want to seek revenge. Is that a particular social group?
Your Honor, it is because the record evidence shows that in the country of El Salvador, snitches are considered social pariahs. And so they're set apart from society in distinct ways, and they're persecuted in distinct ways.
Counsel, so why are they considered social pariahs? Why?
So beginning with the country conditions evidence, the State Department details how those suspected of being gang informants are persecuted and witnesses are targeted and killed, and that it's a principal human rights concern in the country of El Salvador.
So they're social pariahs precisely because they get persecuted. They get persecuted by these gangs. So my question is kind of similar to what Judge Corman was asking, because he's focusing on, doesn't this just seem like retribution and or sort of just trying not to get caught, right? Like if somebody sees that you did something, try not to get caught. But isn't there also a problem that the PSG that you're proposing is completely completely based on persecution, right? If they are social pariahs here, then they're social pariahs because they get persecuted by. It's not like society just thought, man, snitches are bad. I don't like the fact that they sound like your little brother, you know, that tells on you. If they have social visibility, to use the language of, then isn't the social visibility precisely because if you snitch, you are going to get attacked by a gang? And in that case, isn't your social group being defined by the persecution, which we know you can't have one is defined only by persecution?
Your Honor, a few points on that. And so first, with respect to Judge Corman's question, I'd like to make clear here that just as my colleague, Ms. Hidalgo, suggested, the participation of the government in Mr. Rojas Lopez's persecution distinguishes this from a case of personal vendetta. It's not right to characterize this case as merely a case of somebody being mad that somebody snitched on them and involved them in some judicial or criminal process. What matters here is that there's this state action, and although that's not required for the asylum context, it is important to keep in mind that this sets us apart from sort of a personal motivation. Second, with your question on circularity, this court held in Diaz-Reynoso v. Barr that the inclusion of persecution is a sort of poison pill that dooms any group, does not withstand scrutiny. So persecution is allowed to be part of an articulated particular social group so long as it is not the only basis for the particular social group. And here we have several factors outside of the fact of persecution that are central to the definition of the articulated social group. So for example, we have men in El Salvador who are not gang members, who are believed to have reported gang crime, and all of those factors are outside of the context of persecution. And you know, this court held in Diaz-Reynoso v. Barr that it's illogical to expect a person seeking relief on the membership, a basis of membership in a...
Counsel, I hear what you're saying there, but if the only reason that something has social visibility, if the only reason that it qualifies as a group, and this is, which we have, that's up to the agency to determine in the first instance, right? If the only reason it qualifies as a group is because those people are persecuted, so for instance, isn't that a problem? So for instance, you know, shoplifters here in the United States, you know, are shoplifters a group, a persecuted group or not? Well, I don't know that they're actually considered to be a social group in and of themselves here in the United States because the gangs don't seek retribution against them, right? So it seems to me, if that is the only reason it has social visibility, that seems to be a problem.
Your Honor, this court held in Pereira-Bach v. Holder that the persecutor's perspective is properly considered not as dispositive but as probative, where the act of persecution is the catalyst that causes social distinction more broadly. And that's exactly what's happening here. You're right that it's the persecutor and the gang's persecution of Mr. Rogel Lopez in the first instance that really calls the group into question and sets them apart in a significant way. But then after that initial catalyst act, the record evidence in this case shows that his group is set apart and that society more broadly, beyond just the persecutor, just the gang here, perceives snitches as social pariahs. So, for example, in Mr. Rogel Lopez's own testimony in the record at 96, Mr. Rogel Lopez explains that when he was on the run and fearing for his life and seeking safe harbor with his uncle, he didn't disclose his status as a perceived snitch to his uncle because he was so afraid that his uncle wouldn't lend him safe harbor. And so country conditions evidence really shows, in addition to Mr. Rogel Lopez's own credible testimony, that snitches in Salvadoran society are social pariahs. People try to avoid associating with them. And further, that the group is defined with particularity. People clearly know the outer bounds of the group and concertedly try to avoid crossing that line.
Well, I hear you on particularity. Can I ask, running out of time, Judge Paz?
No, just go ahead.
I'm a little surprised because several times I've heard when you've articulated the PSG, you've added in there the piece that they did not report, but they are perceived to have reported. And I thought your argument was that that was an error here by the IJ and the BIA to view this group as the smaller group of people who are perceived to have reported but didn't report, as opposed to what I assume would be a larger group, which is the imputed, which is, in other words, we don't look at whether or not they are actually... We treat them as if they did report. And is that how we should look at this? Is that how the agency should have looked at this?
That's correct, Your Honor. So under Pereira-Bach v. Holder, imputed membership in a particular social group is just as good under the law as actual membership in a particular social group. And to be clear, our articulation of the PSG is men in El Salvador who are not gang members but are persecuted on the belief that they reported gang crimes. So our position is that people believed to have reported gang crimes could be either people who actually did report those gang crimes or people who are just believed to have reported.
So it's the whole group. Gotcha. Okay.
The imputed membership in the group.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right.
If there are no further questions on asylum, I'd like to reserve remaining time for rebuttal.
Let's hear from the government.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Greg Kelch, and I represent the United States Attorney General. I'd like to begin with a particular social group issue, and by doing so, I'd like to remind the court that although the petitioner filed this petition for review pro se, he was represented by counsel before the agency. At the conclusion of his merits hearing, the immigration judge specifically warned the petitioners and his counsel that they had not submitted evidence to demonstrate that the proposed particular social group was cognizable. And that continues to be the case in this petition. The only evidence that we have the particular social group is men who are non-gang members in El Salvador who witnessed gang crimes and are persecuted by such gang members for the belief that they reported the crimes. And I understand that on appeal, he's also arguing that it should be an imputed membership of people who witnessed gang crimes and reported them. Even if that were an exhausted particular social group, there just is not record evidence to demonstrate that people who report crimes or people who are believed to have reported crimes are a socially distinct and particularized group.
Now, is that an exhausted, the imputed PSG? Is that an exhausted PSG or no?
We say that it is not, Your Honor.
What's the difference between the two that you just articulated, though?
Well, there are two groups. One is a group of people who are wrongly believed to have done something, and one is a group of people who have done something.
Yeah, he's imputed. There's no allegation here that he went to the police. It's the argument is that he's imputed to be part of the group of informers or snitches that went to the police. He's imputed to be a member of that, of such a group.
Correct, Your Honor, but
it seems to be the same way as you just articulated it.
Well, Your Honor, we say that they are separate issues, and if you look at the arguments that he made before the agency, he did not argue for imputed membership in some group of people who have reported crimes, but he was part of a group of membership, a group of people who are believed to have done something. And it might be a reason.
Explain to me the difference.
Well, Your Honor, in matter of CA, the BIA held that people who are confidential informants lack the social distinction to be a particular social group. So had he and his counsel gone to immigration court and said they are imputed to believe confidential report informants or other people.
Let me ask you this. Can there be an imputed argument for a particular social group?
Yes, Your Honor. Just as we
recognize an imputed, for example, imputed political opinion, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And that same principle applies here, isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor. However,
His argument is just it's an imputed membership.
Your Honor, he had an opportunity to make his argument before the immigration judge and the BIA, and he did not say imputed membership. He said membership in a group of people who are believed. However, even if this is an exhausted issue, still we come down to people who have reported crimes. There is no record evidence of them being a socially distinct and particularized group. And, you know, with respect, we read the record differently than petitioner's counsel. When the petitioner testified, was asked, why did you not report this to the police? Why did you not assist them? He didn't say it was because all of his friends and his family would look down on him for doing so. He said it was because he was afraid of retribution. He was afraid that he would be harmed for doing so. And while that is unfortunate, and we do recognize that, that he is not a member of a cognizable particular social group as is required for asylum eligibility. So we would respectfully ask that the court deny that aspect of his petition for review.
But that's an argument that he's not a member of the group. What you're saying is that he had to have reported it.
Pardon me, Your Honor. Let me be more clear. That he does not belong to a cognizable particular social group, not that he isn't a member of a group. Excuse me if I misspoke.
Right. Your argument here is this group is just legally not cognizable.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
And the basis for that argument is what, again?
Your Honor, the determination of cognizability is based on a case-by-case basis on record evidence.
Sure.
He has not submitted evidence in this record that people who have reported crimes or are believed to have reported crimes are a socially distinct and particularized group in El Salvador.
So why does this proposed group fail the particularity requirement? You know, defining the boundaries of the group.
Well, there are a couple problems. One is the question of what does it mean to report? His testimony was that he is a snitch. And what is that? Is that somebody who files a formal police report and signs his name on it and makes it public? Is that somebody who speaks to a police officer in a confidential fashion to say what he knows? Is it somebody who answers a police officer's question like, did you see so-and-so run past here? So that is an issue of reporting. What does it mean to report? And that is one of the standards that he has to meet. And moreover, there's also the social distinction issue. It's not clear on this record that people in El Salvador view people who report as being some kind of socially distinct group. And there certainly isn't any evidence that law-abiding people in El Salvador look down on those who have cooperated with law enforcement.
Well, you know, they sort of acknowledge that they waived their argument, but there was embedded in their brief was an argument that there's a law in El Salvador that protects people who report crimes and testify on behalf of the prosecution and whatnot.
I recognize that, Your Honor. The problem is that
we seem to have acknowledged that particular law in what was the case? I forget the name of it. One of our cases.
Enrique Rivas, Your Honor.
Yes, Enrique Rivas, that's right.
Enrique Rivas, though, is distinguishable because in that case, the court was dealing with another aspect of El Salvador's special witness protection law, That had to do, and Enrique Rivas had to do with people who go to court and testify.
Yes, but there seems to be a suggestion that that law is broader than just that, protecting people who testify.
And Your Honor, that is evidence that would have had to have been presented to the agency.
Understood.
We can't fault the BIA for not considering arguments and evidence that were presented.
I understand your argument. As the petitioners seem to they said it in a 28J letter recently on that issue, on that law.
Yes, Your Honor. And so with that, we believe that because this particular social group argument is not supported by the record, the court should deny that aspect of the petition for review. And that brings us to the issue of cat protection. And Your Honor, cat protection cases are difficult.
Can I ask you a quick question before you go on?
Yes, Judge Corman.
I believe we have similar laws in this country that protect people who cooperate with the police, who testify, and interfering with that is called obstruction of justice or endeavoring to obstruct justice. Does that make them a protected group in the United States, a recognized protected group because it's in the public interest to encourage people and protect people who cooperate with the government?
I suspect that it does not. One of the things I tried to do here, Your Honor, though, is not to get ahead of the agency. This argument and this evidence hasn't been presented to the BIA, and it's not my place to make decisions on asylum applications before the agency has ruled. My suspicion is that this evidence standing alone is not going to change the BIA's decision and find that he is a member of a cognizable particular social group. But beyond that, I wouldn't want to say much more on evidence that the agency hasn't considered. And so with that, we come to the cat protection issue. And the point I wanted to make is that these cat protection cases are difficult because they have a much higher standard than asylum. The issue here is not whether there's a well-founded fear of future persecution, but whether it's a probability. And so the agency has to look in its crystal ball and get a sense of what's going to happen in the future. What is probable? What is the kind of harm? And is that harm going to rise to the extreme level that is torture? And what we think is significant, most significant about this case is that the record implicates the possibility of internal relocation. The petitioner had run-ins with the gang when he stayed with his sister and with his sister in Apopa and his uncle in San Marcos. Those individuals both submitted affidavits and stated that when they moved to Soyapango, El Salvador, and San Luis Talpa, El Salvador, gang members no longer came to their house looking for the petitioner. And that's probative about whether they are going to look for him if he moves to other areas of El Salvador. And again, this case largely comes down to the standard of review. The petitioner, who was represented by counsel, he had the burden to demonstrate by a clear probability that if he returns to El Salvador, he would be tortured. But here, this is a shooting that he observed in September of 2013. He did not, in fact, cooperate with the police in any way. Those individuals who did the shooting, he testified that they were released by the police because the police did not have any evidence against them. Those several years have gone by. Family members were able to avoid gangs by moving to other areas in El Salvador. It was a reasonable conclusion. That evidence is substantial evidence to support the agency's conclusion that he failed to demonstrate eligibility for cat protection.
And in your view, that's conclusive. And that's the end of the discussion.
Your Honor, the standard of review is for substantial evidence.
The standard of review about substantial evidence, whether he's likely to face likely to be located and face persecution, but is it the beginning and the end of the discussion is conclusive on the issue of relocation that what you've just argued?
I think I understand your question, Your Honor. The agency views all of the evidence together, all of the totality. So you're correct. It's not a switch. Internal relocation is one factor of many, but when we combine the amount of time that's gone by, the fact that internal relocation does seem to be a possibility, those factors and the agency's conclusion that although what he experienced was indeed severe and unfortunate, it didn't quite rise to the level of torture, altogether, that supports the agency's conclusion that he did not demonstrate eligibility for cat protection.
I was just going to ask, is it your position that he didn't show that he suffered past torture? Is that the government's position?
It is, Your Honor. And as I always say, it's a grisly business trying to figure out whether somebody's harm rises to the extreme level that is torture. And we look at cases that have come before the courts before. No case is perfect. No case has all of the elements of the next case. But generally, we're looking at an incident that happened over the course of 2 days. He was beaten by two people, beaten on his face and then around the ribs. We do recognize that harm. He was threatened with death. The BIA, in its decision, they discussed the harm that he had suffered. They cited the relevant portions of the trial transcript, and they cited cases of people who have been harmed and threatened with death. And we believe we stand on the arguments that's made in our brief that the agency correctly determined that what he experienced, although it is unfortunate, it doesn't rise to that level of torture.
Let me ask you this. Assume for a moment that we were to find some error on the asylum matter and send that back for further work. If you were able to show past persecution, doesn't relocation have to be re-examined for both torture and for asylum?
If you are to, and we tried to make this point in a footnote of my brief, and pardon me if it wasn't clear, If the court finds that he belongs to a cognizable particular social group for asylum purposes, that implicates past persecution. And if he's found to have past persecution, there's a rebuttable presumption of future persecution. So the case needs to go back to the agency for it to do that analysis.
Can that also sort of slide over into the relocation for torture as well? Cat really?
I don't think it would, Your Honor, because the burdens of proof work differently. For asylum purposes, if he had past persecution on account of a protected ground, then DHS has the burden of proof to demonstrate that he could avoid harm by relocating elsewhere in El Salvador. But for cat protection purposes, he has...
Would it be proper to have a situation where the government doesn't meet its burden on asylum, but then when you get to cat, you say, well, he can relocate?
Well, Your Honor, that's a good point and a very confusing one that you raise. And we would say that if you believe that this is a cognizable particular social group and there needs to be a remand, the best course of action is to remand it to the agency and to let them work that out in the first instance. And then if he does not receive...
The thing should then go back.
Well, if the court finds that he belongs to a cognizable particular social group, then yes, we would agree that the case needs to go back for further analysis.
Okay. Well, you concede whether you want to argue about whether it relates to it rises to the level of torture. You concede that it was persecuted. There was past persecution.
And so, as I said before, Judge Corbin, I try to be careful not to get ahead of my agency because they specifically avoided answering the question of persecution. But I will say here today that if you find that there is a cognizable particular social group, this evidence does implicate past persecution, and you should definitely send it back for them to look at that issue.
Without treading on your client, you will agree that there's a distinction between past persecution and torture, and that you have to show less past persecution than for torture.
Yes, Your Honor, I do. It's a lower standard.
Now what?
And so, if there are no further questions of the court, I will conclude and ask that the court deny this petition for review. Thank you.
I want to make sure Judge Corman didn't have a follow-up question there.
Well, I don't want to go over. I mean, it seems to me that what they did to him was pretty terrible. It wasn't just, it was they put a gun to his head. They beat him repeatedly with a rifle. They placed the gun against his head and put the gun inside his mouth. They fired shots next to his head. After discussing whether to kill him, they decided to take him to gang members as a gift. After he was delivered to gang members, they tied him up, blindfolded him. While he was blindfolded, the gang members repeatedly beat him and discussed who was going to kill him. They kicked him in the ribs, beat his face, and repeatedly held a knife to his mouth. And this lasted for about 3 hours. Blindfolded and bleeding from his nose, he was left to wait for another gang member to arrive so that the gang could decide who would ultimately kill him. And he thought he was going to die. That's pretty strong stuff. I mean, I think you acknowledge that, you know, prior cases, each case is different. And, you know, unless you get a case that's identical, I don't know how binding the prior case is. And to a certain extent, this becomes a kind of a subjective standard, in addition to being, I suppose, part objective, part subject. I mean, how could you say that this and the mental effect of this outrageous conduct does not fit within that description?
I respect your concerns, Your Honor, and we stand on the arguments that are made in the brief. And we think that moving forward, we think what is most significant is that the evidence overall suggests that he could relocate elsewhere in El Salvador and not face harm.
And that's because they didn't go back to his family to look for him.
That is correct, Your Honor. And with that, we would ask that we would respectfully request that the court should deny the petition for review.
All right, so we'll now hear the rebuttal from the petitioner. How do you begin this?
Judge, they're both out of time.
They can each have 2 minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Your Honor, I'm going to briefly address a few points on asylum, and then I'm going to turn it over to my colleague to address a few points on CAT. First, this case is on all fours with this court's en banc decision in Enriquez-Rivas, where this court held that you could merit social distinction either by testifying in court or by otherwise coming to the attention of cartel members. There are cartel members, here gang members. Here, Mr. Rojas Lopez undoubtedly otherwise came to the attention of cartel members or gang members in this case. The government cited that what it meant to report is unclear, but I would posit that if reporting a gang crime to the police doesn't fit within Enriquez-Rivas' definition of otherwise coming to the attention of gang members, then I don't know what does. And precedent makes...
I mean, that's the one problem with that case, is then the BIA went back and decided that it wasn't based on the persecutor's perspective. It should be based upon society's perspective. And I think in subsequent case law, we've said that we need to defer to that. So that's I think the case you're citing still has some force in our court as far as precedent. But the part you're citing it for, the part that it turns on whether or not they happen to have come to the attention of the gang is the weakest part of that case. Because again, as you go back to what I said earlier, you're sort of basically saying, well, if they're going to be persecuted, they're necessarily a PSG. But that's not what that case stands for. And to the extent that there was any part of that case that stood for that, it's been sort of subsequent case law has deferred more to the BIA. We look to the society. We don't look to the gang.
Okay.
Sure. I see that I'm running up against time. May I just answer your...
Just answer that question.
Sure. So this court can then look to the post-Enriquez-Rivas case law in Conde Quevedo v. Barr. There, petitioner was denied relief, but the court in that case expressly said that if there were evidence that in a specific country, people in the community knew who reported crimes to the police, or if there were laws protecting those who did, the proposed group potentially could be cognizable. That's exactly what's happening here. Record evidence shows that people in El Salvador know that snitches are social pariahs, and there's in fact a special witness protection law protecting those who do. And if there are no further questions on the asylum point, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Ms. Hidalgo.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll just briefly address past torture and relocation. So the biggest difference here between the past torture cases cited by the government and the agency and our case is that here these captors intended to kill Mr. Rogel Lopez. So here, to focus on the absence of more severe physical injuries is to hold against him that he was able to escape murder. And that is error. This court held in Acosung that where an applicant flees to avoid torture, it can hardly be said that that negates the likelihood of future torture. We still maintain that this did rise to the level of past torture for many of the facts that Judge Corman pointed out, putting the gun in his mouth, holding it against his head. The agency didn't address any of that. As far as relocation goes, we know what happens to Mr. Rogel Lopez when he relocates. The gang told Mr. Rogel Lopez that it would find him wherever he went and that it would kill him. They told the same thing to his family members, and then they found him three separate times. So, and the other thing I want to point out is that it is an inference about other individuals' circumstances that the agency relied on here. They didn't elaborate on what happened to them after we relocate. So it's an assumption that they haven't heard from gang members since relocating, and that does not constitute substantial evidence on this record. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate your arguments this morning, and we thank Clinic for at Berkeley for participating in our pro bono program. We appreciate it. Thank you. And we appreciate all the arguments, including the argument from the government as well. So, and with that, we will submit the case for decision. Thank you.